Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. So nice. I hope you have had a Merry Christmas. And we look so forward to getting into this broadcast. We're looking forward into the new year, 2015, see what it holds for us. And we have as our special guest today, Logan Motashami, who is a senior loan manager at AMC Lending, financial contributor at Benzinga.com. Financial blogger, and he has really caught the attention of the networks and many of the experts, because here he is out here studying the market and is beating a lot of the, let's put it this way, his predictions for 2014, which we'll cover just briefly, it's old news, birdcage material, as they say, but we're going to go into it, and because he beat the experts on a lot of his predictions, so really interested in paying attention to him and what he has to say for 2015, especially when we look at housing, big driver of our economy, big driver of our industry, obviously, very interested in it. And so Logan Motashami will be with us a little bit later in the Hot Topics segment. You don't want to miss this. Special thank you goes out to United Guarantee. We want to just thank them so much for what they're doing to make the industry and your jobs all easier. They're working hard so you don't have to, and you have more time to focus on the more important things of your business. The last thing you want to do is have to keep entering information over and over again. So they've done some things with their technology connections that is pretty innovative. First of all, you get more done in less time by using their technology. You get a rate quote and or an MIS or an MI request, or when you do your MI request, without having to lead your LOS or pricing engine. So there's some real advantages in how they've integrated with some other pieces of technology. And you get a fast response to your MI request, and you can forget about those rate cards. Those things have gone the way of travel agents. They're a thing of the past. Well, some people still use travel agents for cruises, I guess, but you can still do it the old way, but don't have to do it with United Guarantee. They do a great job. Very pleased with our relationship with them. For more information about United Guarantee's technology connections and their list of the providers that they are working with, visit ugcorp.com or call your very friendly, very informed account executive with United Guarantee. Again, it's Morgan Insurance, underwritten by United Guarantee Residential Insurance Company. Also, special thank you to the folks at Velma. I smile every time I think of these because they're scrambling all the time. When you work with someone like me on this radio program, which is, we provide this to the public service, but we don't have a huge budget and time. So they're always scrambling to stay focused on what this Lickin' got coming up, and they're covering it so well. So special focus, thank you to our friends at Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant, Velma.com. Check it out, Velma.com. Thank you to Brent Emler and the whole team there, Catherine Nordby and the whole group there that did such a fabulous job for us. And I just encourage you to check them out because they do a fabulous job with you and your email marketing campaign. Of course, a big thank you goes out to Alice and Joe and all those that contribute to this broadcast. Today we've got Alice, Joe, and Sam Garcia on. And so it's so good to have our friends with us. And then we're going to get into the Hot Topics segment a little bit later. No conferences to talk about. At least we're not got those on the calendar. We haven't updated our conference calendar yet. So let's get right into what's going on in the markets. Joe Farr, Happy New Year. Good to have you with us, friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Good to be here. Starting out, we're up today, which is good. We're up about 430 seconds right now. We've been a little bit higher. But have fallen off that, and no economic news came out today. We're about back to where we were before the GDP revision that came out last week, and so that puts us pretty close to near the best levels of the year.
Yeah. Good stuff. Can't wait to find out what that means for us as we move forward.
We'll see.
But what's on the radar screen that you got? I mean, there's not a lot of economic news.
No, Greece is back in the news, Dave. I haven't seen them. back to 2010, huh? Yeah, apparently the government-backed president was up for vote, a parliamentary vote, to keep him in his position, and he didn't garner enough votes. And what's going on in Greece right now, it seems as though those austerity measures that Germany and the rest of the ECB forced on Greece in the bailout of Greece is meeting with resistance from the people. The people have seen now the hardships created by the austerity measures for a few years, and they're not seeing their prospects improve a whole lot. And the party out of power is gaining a lot of popularity, and there's going to be an election in January to, you know, that's going to pit the party in power, which is the austerity party, and the challenging party of, you know, referred to as the leftist party, one that's anxious to get out of some of those austerity measures in January. And so, you know, I think that it's not as big an issue as it was in 2010. The banking
right.
system is in far better condition, and it's too early to say. I mean, there's similar sentiment growing in other countries, primarily in Spain, where the people are just you know, upset with austerity measures, and they want somebody to come in and do something about it, even though you know, it means the government doesn't have the money to spend it. You know, it's a situation where the people want policies that the government can't afford without bankrupting the government. So it does create some uncertainty. And there was a reaction to the results of the election in the European stock market early, but that big drop that occurred early on, you know, some of it was given back, especially in the southern states, Greece and Spain particularly. And the stock markets were down there. Our U.S. market is basically flat. I hadn't looked here in the last few minutes, but it's basically flat. So, you know, it's interesting that it's back in the news, and we'll see if it grows from here.
Very interesting. Yeah, I mean, the focus back international. It just is, I think, in here about, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about people that think, you know, money just, where does it come from? The lack of financial awareness, I mean, just knowledge out there. Basic economics is just astounding to me in these countries. And we got it here in America. I mean, it's the only reason why we're talking.
We certainly do. I mean, yeah, no, we're spending more than we make. So,
we get away with it for one reason. Our U.S. dollar is just, I mean, now we're going to get into a hot topic with all of that, but it's really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about this last week. That was kind of an interesting week for it being a short week.
Well, it was, and you know, it comes with thin trading and create some volatility, but the news was what caused the big move in prices last week. We dropped about 25 basis points in price. All of that came on Tuesday, which was the day that the government released the revised third quarter GDP. It was revised from 3.9. The second estimate had it 3.9 all the way to 5%. Consensus called for a rise, but only to 4.3%. So it was a bit of a surprise. It wound up being the best quarterly growth since 2003. And quite frankly, there wasn't a lot in the revision that would cause you to challenge it. I mean, it was pretty strong growth coming out of the business investment sector and the consumer spending. You know, as much as the bond prices didn't like it, actually, I should say that the bond prices weren't as negatively affected by that as one might think. The stock market liked it, and the Dow continued to been on a rise since the Fed meeting the week prior. But it's now, as everyone I'm sure is aware, it's topped 18,000 in the Dow.
Amazing.
So you know, it was a big day, good numbers, but not so good for the mortgage rates. The other data that came out during the week was a little mixed. Actually, most of it was a little unfavorable or didn't meet expectations. Jobless claims fell, which was good to see. But durable orders fell. expected up 3% and fell 0.7. Excluding the volatile transportation orders, the number was not all that bad, but still was negative. The new and existing home sales, which we'll be talking about later on, fell about 2% from October. Nice to see that inflation, core PCE, stayed flat.
Flat, yeah.
No change there.
Which, that's encouraging, which hopefully keeps interest rates in the reasonable range down here. They're reasonable no matter what you're. Even if it go up some, it's still considered reasonable. But boy, what is
that? Oh, absolutely.
But if it flat, and then you start asking questions of, you know, what about the other side of this thing? If we're not dealing with inflation, is there any real risk of deflation? And I know no one's really saying that and talking about that. You hear a few blogs on that, so we're going to be talking a little bit about that as well. Go ahead.
That too is going to be largely affected by the price of oil and its influence on the price of gas, and that its influence throughout the economy. And so should we move in that direction? I mean, everyone should focus on core, but, that's going to be, as the Fed said in their meeting, it's transitory and is not going to be given a lot of weight because it's not going to stay this way for long.
Yeah, exactly. That's to be anticipated. Yep.
Yeah.
So this week, fairly light calendar.
Yeah, it is. There's not much on it. Again, it's a short week, much like last week. We'll close early on Wednesday and be closed all day Thursday. The information that does come out, consumer confidence comes out tomorrow. Chicago PMI and pending home sales on Wednesday. The ISM on Friday. And as I said, we'll be closed on Thursday.
Yeah, well, very, very interesting. It's going to be a short week, but not quite as much data as last week. We had that short week, but it was just on Wednesday. Tuesday was loaded up.
Tuesday was loaded, right.
Loaded. So not so much data, but we'll be looking at ISM on Friday. That will be rolling out. So we've got a little bit of here to pay attention to. But, folks, if you do not use this service called MBS Quote Line, you just, I don't know what you're using out there to stay in touch, but especially when you hear that things going on, not much in the calendar, but you got Europe, you got to have a service that just brings you up to date on everything as it's happening. And I value this service. I use it constantly myself, and I just can't thank Joe and his team enough for all that they do for the markets. Joe, thanks so much. Looking forward to having your participation in the discussion with Logan. Should be very interesting. And we've got lots I'll talk about, so sharpen up your questions, and we'll get into that in just a bit. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. So fun to have this whole team together. And we've got Paul Mallow on the line. It's always fun to get some updates from the top reporter in the industry out there chasing down everything. How are you doing, my friend? Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Hope
Merry Christmas.
Enjoying it?
Yeah, no, last week was quite a busy week with news. This week it's starting off slow. We got some good transfer numbers from Ginnie Mae. They were kind enough to tell us that the agency approved about $66 billion in transfers last year. What makes that so interesting was a big plunge from the year before, and everyone's like, well, you know, there's no mega deals this year, which is true. And, which sort of segues into Ocwen, which is, you know, casting a pall on the entire bulk sale market. There's plenty of deals going on. There's a lot of small deals, there's a lot of flow deals, but there's no mega deals. I mean, everything that Ocwen went through has really dampened the market right now, and no one wants to do any business in any major way if you're dealing with high-touch servicing. So that market is sort of frozen. Last week I couldn't make the show because the Ocwen story was breaking, the big settlement.
Yeah.
And Bill Irby was resigning from all the boards, including Ocwen's. So, you know, it will be interesting to see now that that case is sort of settling or is settled, to see whether the bulk market comes back for legacy product. You know, so and the other story, of course, is, you know, Ocwen's going to be selling like $160 billion in MSRs. And, you know, who's going to buy that product? And there's all sorts of speculation about who it makes sense for, who it doesn't make sense for. Well, maybe the banks will step back in, but then they have Basel problems because of their MSRs and their Tier 1 capital. So it's an interesting story.
It has some significant ramifications to the industry. I mean, this could be, you know, Ocwen could still continue to have a huge influence on what's going on out there. That's fascinating story.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what the future is for that company. You could spend a whole show talking about Ocwen, really.
Oh yeah.
You know, where does it? You know, they talk about growing the originations, and everyone in the industry knows, you know, they don't have much origination capacity, and to put capacity on, you got to spend money, and Ocwen isn't a company that, you know, likes to spend money unless, you know, they ship jobs overseas and they cut costs by, you know, being the lowest cost provider. And it's really hard to build an overseas platform with originations that's overseas, that is cheap, and can compete in the U.S. against companies here because it's, you know, servicing can lend. You could argue that servicing lends itself to outsourcing jobs overseas because it's more of a call center business. And mortgages originations are about selling, and it's hard to outsource that function, or at least to do it, you know, outsource it well. And that's going to be interesting to watch what their future is with Bill Irby out the door. So,
yeah.
And keep in mind that he's still a huge stockholder in Ocwen.
Yeah.
So he's going to have some influence to some degree on what goes on there. Also on the website today, www.imfnews.com, we got a talk about CoreLogic talking about housing trends. They think that first-time home buyers might be somewhat of a force next year because their employment numbers are looking better. So that's out there. GreenTree cut a new servicing advance line with Barclays, $1.2 billion. Their previous line was $100 million, and they used it to pay off servicing advances with Fannie Mae. That's a story that we're going to explore a little more because apparently Fannie Mae is a big lender of servicing advances, and no one really knows about that. And we're going to get into that a little more probably this week and next week. We have a story from Brandon Ivey about a couple REITs focusing on the commercial MBS market. That would include PennyMac as well as Two Harbors. Both those companies are active in the jumbo space. It'll be interesting to see how both these companies do in commercial market, which is a very strong, as you may know, commercial MBS has had some very good years.
Yes.
And has returned to health, unlike the jumbo MBS business. So. Also on the law firm is out there.
You're on the seat.
I'm on the hot seat.
But on the website.
Ocwen stock has been crushed this year. Getting back to Ocwen, they're investigating Ocwen. And, you know, like many other law firms, it looks like they're going to try and get a class action lawsuit on behalf of Ocwen shareholders. Just because, by the way, I should point out, just because a law firm says it's investigating Ocwen and they want to do something on behalf of shareholders, they have to get class action certification before they could really move forward on that. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of damages, if any, Ocwen will wind up paying to shareholders or whether this thing will just never reach the courts or they'll reach some kind of settlement. And we have some short takes out there. We point out that LendingClub, peer-to-peer lender, recently went public.
Yep.
They have a market cap of $1.52 billion. And I point this out because
that was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they've made $5 billion in loans since their existence a couple of years ago. It's peer-to-peer. None of this is real estate-backed. And their market cap is already $1.52 billion, which is worth more than PHH, which is sort of silly because they've been around for three decades and they service $200 billion in loans. So, you know, obviously someone is betting they either have a great future or short sellers are driving up the price of the stock by speculating it.
Yep.
So those are all the highlights, and we'll see what develops the rest of the week. We don't expect too much big news, but, you know, you never know. Sometimes companies spring something on the press, either on New Year's Eve or the day after. So we'll see what happens.
Always interesting, and you got it covered. I love your website. Go there all the time to just kind of check what's going on. If there's a rumor going on, you're on top of it. But you do it so responsibly, Paul. So I don't know how you balance that, but it's just a great job, Cap. So thrilled to have you on the part of the broadcast here.
Thanks
all the
for
time.
Having me.
And greet all of our friends there. And wish you yourself a very happy new year, my friend.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
You bet. Alice Alvey, so much fun to have you on here as always. Good to have the updates and what's happening out there. You sent your notes over to me. I've got them up here in front of me. So let's go into, we're talking about 2015. God, what do you think, Alice? Is it just going to continue to be more of the same for us on the regulatory front?
Well, I think if we look ahead to 2015, you know, obviously we have the big integrated disclosure rule to implement, and that's going to take a lot of time. We're going to have the HMDA changes, but according to what is posted out at the various agency websites, it doesn't look like we're going to even get a final rule to look at until somewhere in July, which means we'll have a little bit of a window there to ramp up for 2016. We still have the appraisal management company oversight rule that hasn't been finalized, so AMCs are anxiously hoping that will get ignored and not move forward. We'll see what happens with that. What I think is interesting and kind of plays a little bit to what Logan's going to be talking about is Fannie Mae's development and Freddie, of course, of collateral underwriters. So their user interface is growing. It's going to continue to expand in Q1 2015. Everybody should take a look at Fannie Mae's quarterly compass that was published on their website just in December here. It's got some great links so you can read all about this product. And what you're going to find is an absolute dramatic shift in how appraisals are underwritten. Today, you know, underwriters use a lot of speculation, and they have some pretty bright line rules on if a comp is too far and not good. Well, collateral underwriter may decide that you've got three comps within a mile, but they're still not the best comps. Or we have other reports that indicate the appraiser's data was incorrect here because other appraisers used different data. And you're going to have to reconcile these every single time you submit an appraisal. So gone is the day of speculative, you know, working with some very gray rules. And those who are using the collateral portal and the uniform data collateral sets that Fannie and Freddie require now, I mean, there's still some community lenders out there who haven't gone that route. They're going to have to get on board because their reports and their analysis of appraised value is not going to be the same as the industry. So this to me is one of the biggest game changers. That's going to be new and watching its impact on values, you know, what lenders will take as value versus what a realtor thinks is value, I think is going to be very impactful.
Yeah, there's no question that it will. But I'm thinking of all the things that are going to be impactful. The TRID coming up, that is going to – any sense on your travels that how everyone's going to be coming up with the TRID? I mean, do you really think people are set for this? You have concerns.
Well, I think there are different groups, right? So, actually, I just wrote an article on this that'll get published in the Mortgage Compliance Magazine about where we see the different groups, we're going to be putting in a few articles also for a couple other publications coming forward that will explain where the progress that we're seeing in each one of the groups. A lot of folks, I think, have digested the regulation to start to get a feel for what's going to come up. If you haven't even done that, then you are way behind the curve. We can help you with our TRID, our TILA RESPA Integrated Disclosure Training Package. That's not only a great resource to get you started training, but really just if you need to get around the curve to know what's going to hit you, this is just a great reading resource of a shortened version of the mega pages. There are groups that are starting to identify, holy cow, I didn't think of that, right? You know, because when you first read it, it sounds like it's the same. There's certain parts, you know, they talk about zero tolerance and a 10%, and people go, oh, well, that's what we have today, and so they skim right through it. The reality is they're completely different, and we really have most of our fees sitting in a zero tolerance bucket. So I think folks are just now starting to wake up to the reality of how very different it really is. And that'll be evolving in the first quarter. I think we'll do a fairly good job of being ready for lots of providers, but I think there's a couple LOS providers that aren't going to make it around the curve. I've talked to a couple of companies that have had to switch systems because they know their provider's not going to make it around the curve.
That
so they're trying
is...
to go through a system conversion right now at the same time
wow.
as changing forms.
Wow. That's what we thought might be happening and
yeah.
concerned about that. That's very interesting, Alice. Fascinating. Interesting. Well, what are you doing for New Year's? You're going to be staying there up in cold Michigan, or are you going to go off somewhere fun?
Well, we actually have tickets to the Red Wings game. We're going to be watching a hockey game, just like true northern folks would do on New Year's Eve.
And that's outside, too, isn't it?
No, this year we're indoors. Last year we did sit in the snowstorm out at U of M Stadium when Wings
that's
played Toronto. That was crazy.
Yeah. You were out there, and I was thinking, oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, the Minnesotans, where I'm broadcasting from now, and Michiganites are all very hardy folks to enjoy this kind of weather. They do it. It's crazy. So, Al, so much fun. Have a wonderful time at the game, and happy
Thank
New
you.
Year. Greet your family. Appreciate you so much. Feel like we're as close as family with all that we do here together, and just value the relationship. So, appreciate you, Alice. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
All right, everybody. So, by the way, someone wrote me and says, you got a cold looking? I go, oh, yeah, let me tell you. This has been one of those interesting Christmases. Traveling. I've done a lot of traveling, shuttling family around to get grandmas to where they need to be and have with family. And it has been just an unusual Christmas. And did not get the rest I needed. And traveling through some cold country. It's 5 below this morning when I was outside going to the car. And I go, man, I forgot. I grew up here in Minnesota. I forgot how cold 5 below is. So I'm heading back down to Sam Garcia territory. Be flying home today and looking forward to that. So it's good to have Sam joining us. And I've got your website, MortgageDaily.com, up here. And it's interesting. I'm looking at the Christmas week mortgage activity off from 2013. First headline up here. Sam, good to have you with us. Give us a rundown.
Hey, good to be on the show. And glad to know I'm a little bit warmer than you today.
But, a little bit. I'll be down there.
All right. Well, looking forward to having you back. You're right. One of our top headlines is our mortgage market index. It was off, you know, it was expected to be off for Christmas, but what's more significant is that it was off 6% from the same week last year. So we're a little bit weak closing out the year compared to 2013. We'll see what 2015 brings for us. The index, of course, reflects product and pricing inquiry data that we get from Optimal Blue. Another story we put out and that we covered was FHA endorsements. We show that there was $14.4 billion in residential endorsements during October from information we get from HUD. And that was 6% better than September. And it was also the second month in a row that FHA production was better. So that's
oh,
nice.
Interesting.
Yeah, and another good factor as far as operations go at FHA was that delinquency dropped to less than 13% from about 13.25% in September. So, you know, hopefully they can keep up these good trends. We'll see. There was a settlement last week, came in late last week that we found out as far as it's on FHA claims. GTL Investments out of Michigan settled allegations that it violated the False Claims Act. Those come into play when FHA claims are made on loans and there's allegations of false claims. So this company out of Southfield is accused of material underwriting deficiencies. So that was announced by the Department of Justice. Always something, you know, we've seen a lot more of that kind of activity in the last year. I expect that we'll continue to see it, FHA coming down on mortgagees. We saw that... some more litigation was that the National Credit Union Administration, it filed a lawsuit against Wells Fargo. And what's interesting is, you know, NCUA has been filing lawsuits against issuers and underwriters of residential mortgage-backed securities that were bought by the corporate credit unions that failed. There were a number of them. But what's interesting about this is it filed the lawsuit against Wells Fargo as trustee of the RMBS. So not the first one either. Recently, I think it was just a week earlier or so, a similar lawsuit was filed by that regulator against Bank of America and U.S. Bank as trustees for RMBS. We'll see where those go, but NCUA's had some pretty good luck, you know, when it, with its other lawsuits, its other MBS lawsuits filed against the issuers. It's going to be interesting to see where they go with these. Another litigation, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, of course, the regulator Fannie and Freddie, it intervened in one lawsuit and filed its own lawsuit in another case involving homeowners associations foreclosure actions that wiped out liens on Fannie Mae loans. So this is a pretty serious issue. It's two states that are at focus right now, and that's Nevada and then Washington, D.C. And in the Nevada case, there was a $6,000 HOA lien that was foreclosed, and that wiped out an $885,000 lien that Fannie Mae held. So a similar ruling, you know, has been made in Washington, D.C. This is going to be something that everybody's going to continue watching real closely, because that's a serious issue, you know, to wipe out liens like that. And either, you know, that could lead to no lending on properties, you know, in those areas
the consequences,
have that kind of a thing.
We'll see
where that case winds up. Those are both in action. And like I said, the FHFA intervened in one case. So the other story I wanted to cover here was there was an announcement last week about Skyline Capital. Skyline Home Loans announced that it raised $18 million in debt and equity. And the capital is going to be used to enter the high-growth non-agency mortgage market. That's what they said in the announcement. And what's interesting about Skyline is its CEO, Bill Dallas, you know, he's got that non-agency experience. You know, he was CEO of the former subprime lender Own It Mortgage Solutions, and he's got some other experience there too. So be interesting to see what happens there, and I know everybody's always interested when anything non-agency is coming out that's new, and you know, hopefully this will turn into something that's worthwhile for some of the players out there.
It's an encouraging development. I know Bill was working on that, and I'm so pleased to see he was able to pull that off. We'll see if that's a signal of more to come, or is it just his tenacious ability to go out and stay at it, and so it'll be really interesting. Sam, thanks so much. Appreciate you taking time in this short week.
Always good to be here.
Join us. Always good to hear. Check out the website, folks, if you haven't. Make sure and make the Mortgage Daily a part of your way of getting information. And get a hold of Sam if you want to sign up. SamGarcia@MortgageDaily.com or call him at 214-521-1300. Check out their website, www.MortgageDaily.com. All right. Well, we're excited to have with us today our special guest, Logan Motoshami. Logan is someone I started tracking on Facebook and LinkedIn, and I saw some of his predictions. I go, oh, I like this. And then I go, wait a minute, he's a loan originator. Now, how can a loan originator be competing with these guys that are study this all the time? And then you get to know Logan, you go, boy, he is not your average run-of-the-mill loan originator. He is a senior loan manager at AMC Lending Group. He's also a financial contributor at, again, as I said, Benzinga. It's BENZINGA.com financial. He has also got been on CNBC. He's been on, if you go over to his website and check that out, you'll see that he has been on, I believe it was, Logan, if I'm not mistaken, you were on with Bloomberg as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I've done a few interviews with Bloomberg and spoken to CNBC this year as well.
Well, not even Diana Orlick is starting to pay attention to what you're saying because of your accuracy. But anyway, we're getting into this stuff. I just want to say, Logan, it's good to have you back on the broadcast. If people don't know you, they certainly need to know you. I say that for a number of reasons. First of all, you're accurate, but I just love the fact that there's several side stories here. It's the use of social media, how we connected.
It's the knowledge and the research that you're putting in there. And so people say, well, we got to find out what this economist says, what that economist says. No, I'm telling everybody, pay attention to what Logan Motoshami is saying. It's really got some great stuff. So let's. It's good to have you with us, Logan, and hope you had a good.
Good to be back.
Merry Christmas. Good to have you back. Always love it, and we could talk a lot about you, and we do. But for those that don't know, give us just a quick, you know, you are a senior loan manager at AMC. This is a business with you and your dad have, if I'm correct, from a previous podcast.
Yes, we've had our family-owned mortgage company here for 28 years, and our family in general has been in banking since the late 1950s. So this is kind of what we do. And when you're focused just to work on numbers, math, facts, and data, you can see why the housing pundits, economists, real estate agents, everybody's been wrong. And not just for this year. I mean, this year was a tragic miss on many fronts. But if you look in the past 15 years, the housing analyst community hasn't been that good. And I primarily the factor for that to me is that a lot of them don't have a financial lending background. And if you actually have real live conversations with them and you break down their models, you could see terrible flaws ranging from all groups. And I think there's where I knew this was going to be the case late 2012 when people started talking about, oh, the great boom in housing, here we go again, because they were falling off the price metric, which wasn't a very good metric to use in this cycle. And then in 2013, you had the housing nirvana crew come out. And
housing nirvana crew,
nirvana narcissism, as I call them. But if you look back on May 7th of 2013, I wrote an article basically warning that when the second hand of inflation comes in for housing, which is interest rates, and I'm not a big rate guy in terms of total demand, because the internal demands were so weak that's going to impact sales. And everybody was saying that's impossible, rates are so low, that's a silly notion. They were tweeting things to me, look, your payment's going to grow up. I said, just wait. And if you look at that point, if you look at the data from May 7th, 2013 to today, mortgage purchase applications have been in a bear market trend. Why? Because interest rates went up. Okay, so it impacted demand. But prices went up too. So PITI, principal interest taxes and insurance, the factor models in regards to real median incomes wasn't very good. And this is why housing demand didn't come through. And 2014, I knew for a fact that this was going to be the year that it showed that a lot of the economists, a lot of the housing pundits, and again, the Nirvana narcissism crew, was going to be wrong because they're looking at the wrong information. And this has been going on for 15 years. So it wasn't a shock to me, but I think finally, I'm finally seeing some people realize, wait a second, if we missed it this bad, in this year, I mean, you got to look, 2014, we had rising inventory, lower interest rates, rising rent inflation is at the peak of the cycle. You had an economy posting the best monthly average job numbers since 1999, and you have 4 to 5 last GDP prints at 3.5%. If I would have taken every single housing person on CNBC, Fox, Bloomberg, anywhere, and told them that for 2014, they would have said, things are booming. We would be great. You know, housing is back. We're going to have great expansion. No. What happened was we had negative year-over-year demand for existing home sales. New home sales, which was supposed to be 25%, end up basically being really 2 to 3% growth at best, you know, when we get the last final numbers. So what happened? And I think finally we're starting to see some people, you know, my models are broken. And I think once they get that, you're going to get a little bit better analytical information from the housing community.
Well, you caught the attention of Diane Orlick. I'm looking at up here. For those that are wanting to connect with you and watch what you're doing, check out his blog. It's Logan, L-O-G-A-N-M-O. His last name is MOHTASHAMI.com. If you go to that, you'll see a smiling face when he was on one of the programs here, and he's got snowfall in the background. He's got his 2014. I suspect you're going to be posting your 2015 forecast here shortly.
Yes, it's up, and we go over many the 7 different areas. But you know what I wanted to do with the 2015 prediction is to basically
say there it is. I was realizing I was connected to the old
your last one, and I was reading for the, getting ready for the broadcast. Yeah, I see that now. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really going to show that the bar is so low in housing right now that a very predictable tactic that I've seen housing analysts use for 15 years is that they use low bar metrics to all of a sudden go, hey, wait a second, you know, we're going to see an increase here, and that really means that housing's recovering, that booming demand. So I wanted to emphasize on that because I'm already seeing people write that first-time home buyers are going to come back, and they're going to come back in big numbers. Well, in reality, first-time home buyers hit a 21st century low in 2014. Okay, so if you get an increase of a little bit, is that really a valid thesis to make? But this is a tactic that housing bulls have always used for years now, that they take low bars, and then you get an uptick in percentage, and they say, look, we were right. But if you actually break down the numbers, if cash buyers weren't 20% above their historic norms this year, existing home sales would be at 3.95 million. That's lower than the lowest point of home sales in the Great Recession. So we are being, and I always talk about this, and I talk about this in the article, that 45% of all homes in this country are bought by the rich. And I have my own metrics for the rich, you know, cash buyers and those making.
Yeah, well, if you find the rich, if you have.
Yeah, the rich to me are cash buyers and those who are making 2.5 to 3 times median income. Okay, that's about $132,500, you know, to about $159,000. Now, people go, well, that doesn't sound rich. Well, if you know, majority of the country, you know, don't even make the median income of 53K. So to them, that's rich. And in residential lending, it's all about debt-to-income ratios, and it's all about liquid assets. And that revolves around incomes. I'm not a person that believes in tight lending. I think tight lending is a myth. Still to this day, nobody's ever proved to me why it's tight.
We've come from
you know, the pendulum swing theory. You know, Mark Sandy used to say that the pendulum swung so much, but actually Mark Sandy doesn't even know the core standards of lending. VA loans, 0% down, 60% debt-to-income ratio, 620 FICO, FHA, 3.5% down, 43% debt-to-income ratio. GSEs are 5% down, 43 to 50% debt-to-income ratio, 620 FICO. It's not about that. I think that's the problem we see with the economists and housing analysts, is that they don't have a financial lending background. And because they don't...
I think you raise a really, really good point here. It's important to have a good understanding of the whole mortgage industry, how it works, and some of the things that have been put out there for a while are just crazy. I guess just drives me nuts when I get asked to be on television and talk about how tight credit is. And I go, Alex, I used to underwrite loans way back in the old good old days, Alex, and for years and years. And then, I mean, I think Andy Schell raised a question in one of the previous broadcasts that was really interesting. He says, yeah, but we've got computerization now. We have better models. We can take different risks. And we can expand the credit box. And I go, I don't know. I'm just not buying that. I heard one guy say, we've become too reliant on the carbon-based systems, on the silicone-based systems, which is the automated underwriting, and less reliant on the carbon-based systems, that's us humans. And I really hold on to that. So I think it's an interesting what you're putting out here. So, again, folks, check this out. Alex and Joe, be sure to go to the website, Logan Motoshami, and you'll see his predictions here as we get into the broadcast. I want to have you guys come in, and I should have sent you guys this link. I'm so sorry. I was stuck. I still had it stuck on the 2014 because I was going through that in preparation for the broadcast and how many of these predictions were accurate. So let's get into some of the things that you think, the specific predictions you're making. There's 7 of them here on your website. Let's go through those. So let's talk about mortgage rates. That's going to be a big prediction for where things are at. You say you see the 10-year note yield will be in the range of 1.6 to 3.04. Let's talk about this. What that means to interest rates?
Well, for interest rates, you're looking at a 3.5% to 4.5% range for next year. And, you know, 160 was kind of the low point in 2013 before, you know, the taper tantrum happened and rates spiked up. And 304 is basically that top line of the 10-year. If that could be broken, you know, that to me that would mean a bullish indicator for the economy. But I think we're going to be in a range like that. I mean, if you look at... You know, for the past 10 years, everyone has predicted rates have go higher. Why? Because they base their economic models on an old model that says growth will make interest rates. But if you look at the last, since 1981, you know, the 10-year was at 15.84, I think, at peak. It's gone for a lower trend for 34 years. You look at Germany, Japan, everywhere else. The country can't take higher rates. Okay, I mean, to me right now, 4.7%.
The globe can't take higher rates. That's just our country.
But I mean, even now, look at a 4.5% interest rate in America has impacted demand. I'm not a big rate person, but you could see that, you know, mortgage purchase applications, and this is a crazy stat, but I believe in it. Since the data has been found, we've never had a year where we were in an up cycle where rates fell the entire year and mortgage purchase applications were lower every single week of the year, year-over-year numbers. And there's only been about 4 weeks where they were under double digits negative prints. Okay, the market is telling you something, okay,
yes.
that doesn't kind of jive with the housing. So for rates, I'm looking at a 3.5% to 4.5%. You know, if we could break under 160, then, you know, we could maybe hit all-time new lows in this cycle for the 10-year. But if we could break over 3.04%, then I think that indicates that the U.S. economy is going to be stronger than what many people think. So I'm going to stay in that range for the year.
Well, I jumped to number two, which is mortgage rates. You talked about existing home sales. Just real quickly, I want to come back to the mortgage rates because that's really what I think is going to be a bit of a driver, of, at least I suspect. But let's talk about existing home sales right now. You're predicting that you're going to see somewhere in a 5 million to 5 – well, actually, was that? It's a 5 million to 520 total number of homes sold in 2015.
Yeah.
So talk
and
a little bit about that.
Yeah, and here's the case thesis on that. Last year, you know, I said we could get about conservatively 5.25 million, but the caveat is this: cash buyers can't fall. One buyer, it's got to stay exactly the same. Which basically, I'm telling
yeah.
you, home sales are going to be negative, because even though cash buyers were at a high percentage, the volumes were lower. So what happens is that, you know, you got lower volume. So we're only going to be down maybe 200K. Year over year in total sales, but the fact that inventory was up and rates were down and mortgage purchase applications were negative shows you the real demand out there. And right
yeah.
now I'm saying 5 million to 5.20, which is a slight beat from this year. But again, if the cash buyers are slowly leaving the marketplace, you need mortgage buyers not only to step up to take their place, but to grow even higher. So right now I'll say 5 million to 5.20, which is a slight beat from this year. But, you know, a lot of these Fannie Mae, these Wall Street firms, were talking about 5.7 to 5.8 million home sales for 2014 existing. That would imply a 30% increase in mortgage purchase applications for
wow.
2014. That's what their model showed them. I was like, it didn't make sense, because if you look at what happened is that from – May of 2013, mortgage purchase applications have been in a downward trend in a bear market, basically, for that period of time.
Interesting. Fascinating. But before we move on too much from this, Alice and Joe, do you want to jump in with any questions that you have at this point?
Well, I'll let Joe jump in on the rate question, because mine's more
yeah.
about volume.
Yeah, go
yeah,
ahead.
Logan, sure. Yeah, when we hit the low in 13 of you know, 3.5 or so, we had the Fed buying, you know, 75% of new purchase or new securitized mortgages. Without them in the market, do you think we can get back to the 3.5% low range?
That has more to do with the world economic situation than anything. I mean, we clearly, you know, once the taper started here in America, mortgage rates went down. If we look at back this entire cycle, every time QE has been taken out of the system, rates fell, and it happened again once the taper started and once QE officially ended. Rates went lower. Some of that has to do with the world, you know, in deflationary mode. So I think the Fed out of the picture doesn't really, you know, for us to get back down to, I think the low rate of 2012, intraday was about 1.35 on the 10-year. We had a Spanish default
yeah.
fear scare, and that flooded so much money into our 10-year because, you know, that people thought where Spain was going to default. For us to get to that level, basically, we need more world weakness, because people will buy our bonds. That's basically a safe bet. I mean, yielding yield price for government debt is crazy. If you look at Spain, Spain is priced under 2%, but they have a 25% unemployment rate. So if the world is getting weaker, you know, if Russia collapses or something in that nature, then definitely we could break through that 160 level and hit all-time fresh lows. But that has more to do with the world than us. I mean, our economic numbers are improving.
Well,
the world is kind of going lower.
And what has a little bit to go with on with what's going on with oil prices as it relates to Russia, too. If you look at what that's doing, the strain that's putting on certain countries, and you know, so this is very interesting. It's got so many moving pieces on this. And the thing that I like, you and I, for listeners that are tuning in, Logan and I are getting ready for our broadcast, and we were going back and forth with some messaging last night. And we were I was talking about one of my favorite economists, Harry S. Dent. He's got some great stuff on the demographics. But Logan, one of the things that impressed me when we were going back and forth last night is you stick to the facts. You don't get out into the land of speculation. You say, this could happen, this could happen, that's speculative. Here's what we know. And I think that's what's so key to what has been accurate about what you've been doing in these forecasts is you really don't get sucked off into those, other areas that are so tempting.
Perma bears and perma bulls tend to be wrong 90% of the time. They'll say something is going to happen. They'll spend 90% of the time saying it's going to happen. And then when it happens, they tell you everything's been right. So I think the internal data reads are difficult. Harry Dent, will make these stock market claims. I mean, I'm a big demographic guy myself. I just think that's the most crucial thing in world economics. But, to say stock market predictions, the market's going to go to 6,000 at a certain time, it's crazy. Peter Schiff is the same way. Gold, 5,000 every other second year. And it does. These people are great marketers. Their followers they will follow them to the end of time. But it's very difficult when you have to actually work with day-to-day data. It's kind of difficult to say that the Dow is going to hit 6,000 next month or something like that. It's not a reasonable way.
Well, now that we're on the topic of equities, I mean, we just hit 18,000. What's your thoughts on that? I know not projecting, but just looking at what things, is this sustainable? I mean, I keep going, every time we hit these kind of highs, I've always been more of a technical, I like the fundamentals, but I also look at the technical. And you look at this, and at a time, it just begs for some type of correction that's going to happen in 2015. And do you go there? What do you do with
what
that?
What I tell my fellow bear friends who've been waiting for a stock market crash since 2009, if you look at the peak of 2000, we had a stock market bubble, clearly. The 10-year was at 6.2%. The Fed funds was much higher. It crashed, okay? So that was a valid. In 2007, we had this huge debt leverage housing bubble, and the 10-year was at 4.7%. The Fed funds was much higher. We crashed. Look where we are today. We still have 0% interest rates. The 10-year is, two in the low twos. It's going to be very difficult to get a crash, the stock market crash. You need the economics to crash as well. You need a downtrend. And if you look at all the economic indicators, there's nothing out there that's showing. And I think this has been the problem for people that keep on saying that the stock market's going to crash is that the any of the economic data doesn't show it. So once interest rates rise on short and long end, then the market really looks expensive. And then if the economic numbers don't start pulling through, then people could start making a crash thesis. But again, it's just we're not there. And, 2014, a lot of the indicators economic got better. So as long as rates are low, and we're talking about a lot of Fed rate hikes with duration time frame, but that's where I see the stock market. I mean, it's actually very expensive if you look at normalized rates, but we're nowhere near anywhere. To that factor.
No. Let's get into some of the other predictions you have here. Let's talk. We've talked about mortgage rates. I want to make sure, just to entice people to come in and read it with the time that we have. We've got about 5 minutes before we have to go off air. But let's talk a little bit about, and I apologize for the sniffling going on here in my nose. This thing is just driving me crazy with this symptoms trying to hit me. But let's talk about mortgage purchase applications. You predict some growth on the purchase applications year over year. Talk about that a little bit.
It's you got to be disciplined on the up and down side. So when mortgage purchase applications hit a 21st century low, you know, you have to say to yourself, is things bad enough to get another 10% decline in? And I think where we're at right now is where we were at the 2012 level. So we're kind of right there. And for us to get another 10, I mean, maybe I am too bullish that mortgage purchase applications will be up 5 to 10%, but when you hit century lows, you know, you have to be mindful of that. I think a lot of people who are permanently bearish keep on saying things are going to go lower and lower and lower and lower, but, you know, I couldn't come up with a thesis to get another 10 to 20% decline in mortgage purchase apps. So, you know, flat to slightly higher is my call. But really, by the end of March of 2015, you'll see how the housing market will really look like, because really mortgage purchase applications are from really January to May. Everything else after that is kind of irrelevant. It's really the demand you see early. So we'll see early on, but I've been a bear on mortgage purchase applications apps for a while, and now that we've hit 21st century lows, we need to be a little bit mindful that it's going to take a lot worse economic data to get lower than that.
One of our listeners just sent me a message that says, ask Logan, does he update quarterly his predictions and what he sees happening? And I'll ask him.
You know, I mean, I write articles maybe once or twice a month, but, you know, really a lot of people who follow me because I basically give my housing updates daily on CNBC's articles. That's how Diane and I got to meet. I follow the market daily. So everything I write or anything you see on the web or Twitter or anything like that is daily. It's not it's not even quarterly. You have to follow this stuff daily to get trends right. So if you follow me on Twitter, which is at Logan Motoshami Twitter handle, you'll see information on housing daily put up. You know, and a lot of it ties in with every single. And if you go to my Facebook page, Logan Motoshami, there are about 20 to 25 economic charts put up daily, and it's all with real live information.
Yeah, it is excellent. I come on your website all the time. Every time I'm doing something, I'm checking out. It's really good stuff. Let's talk a little bit. Joe talked about Greece. What about, are we going to see some outliers? Is the global scene's always there as a potential threat, can upset our markets. But let's talk about Greece. What thoughts do you have on what Joe was talking about earlier?
Well, it's political now with Greece, you know, with the elections, you know, do they actually try to renegotiate or do they try to leave the euro? I don't think they would try to leave the euro at this stage. Now that they've stabilized, they will try to probably renegotiate some things. But it would be, I mean, if Greece left the euro in the short term, that'd be very damaging. Maybe in the long term, that'd be better for them. But I don't, you know, I know.
Do they get it, though? Do they get it? I mean, that's the
Well, the Greece 3-year, the 3-year is up to now 12%. If you looked at the Greece bonds today, so I mean, it the market is telling Greece you better be careful. So I don't think they want to have a repeat. You know, if the ECB wasn't there, if the euro wasn't there, you'd see a massive devaluing of currency from all those countries out there because they're just living on a thread, kind of. You know, there's not really strong growth. So the market would price it better, but the yields are so low right now, I don't think Greece is going to, you know, push it over. There might be a lot of renegotiation talks. I don't think Greece will do anything to leave the euro, not at this stage of the cycle. Russia is really the big outlier.
Yeah, that's the big outlier that I think you could have to really, yeah. Oh, man, we're already at 90 seconds left of the broadcast. There's so much information here that I want to cover. That we just got to have you back with more regularity.
Yeah.
I love
the
your
main
commentary.
Thing to watch, the main thing to watch for housing in 2015 is are what the builders are going to do with the new home sales market. New homes are more expensive now than ever in the history of the U.S., and do the builders actually start cutting prices to match existing inventory? I've been slightly more bullish on existing home sales because I think more and more mortgage people are going there instead of new homes. So the big thing to watch, I think, for 2015 is what do the builders do? Because if you look at the median income to median price, home prices have just gone to the roof for new homes. And I think the builders lost, and that's why I was more negative than anybody in 2014 with new home markets.
Listeners, check it out. Go off to his Facebook page, and it's Logan, and it's MOHTASHAMI.com, or go to that's his name, so just he's all over LinkedIn and Facebook. Check it out. Logan, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We really appreciate it. You're just giving us your housing predictions and really, really good stuff. I love it. I could talk to you for a long, long time, but we've run out of time, folks. Be sure to come back next week as we're going to be giving a market update, just talking about what we look forward to with the news. So it'll be just Joe, Alice, and I looking forward to that discussion. Have a great week, everybody, and Happy New Year.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.